Cool. So let's get started. So somebody said that they wanted to talk about main and int and argc and argv and all this confusion. And I agree, it is a bit confusing. So let's demystify that at a minimum. So we'll put that up here. So main and all of that stuff. Let's talk about functions in general. We'll probably sort of blend all this together. But functions in general and what it means to return something. What else do we want to talk about? It's up to you guys. You guys are the ones that showed up, so you get to dictate. Void. So that will go under returning. So we'll talk about void, int. These are more generally known as different types, etc. What, a long integer versus a regular integer, stuff like that? Assignment in general, okay. Let's talk about, so those are kind of related things. Let's talk about typing. That is making something have a certain type, not literally sitting at your keyboard. And assignment. What else? Anything. That's plenty to get us through a long amount of time, but anything else that you guys want to see? So I'll make sure we talk about it. Whatever you're confused about, whatever made you come here, we can talk about.
How about break?
Sure. We'll talk about break, continue, and why don't we just talk about loops in general. And I can't promise to go in this order, but if I'm not covering something here that you wanted to see, just let me know, and we'll do it. All right, on that note, let's get started. So, what's up with main? Actually, let me start this a little bit lower. So main, so what is main? Why is it always around? What does it mean? Any of these things?
I'm guessing it's just like the main part of the program.
Great, it's the main part of the program, and they named it that for a reason. Main is where program execution always begins, right? So if you had just written a bunch of code and you just told the compiler to compile it, if you didn't have main, it wouldn't know what to do. It wouldn't think that you actually had a real program. And this is a built-in feature to C. It's a little bit different in other languages, but main is sort of the canonical name for where the program starts. Here, main is actually a function. So it's not a variable. It's not, anything else. It's a function. So main is the actual function name. And it's a special function for a few reasons, but mostly because it's where program execution starts. I have a tendency to write too small and completely illegibly, so let me know if you can't read it or if whatever. Hopefully they'll zoom in the back. In any case, do we know what it means to say where that's where program execution starts? What would that mean if you were to describe it to a friend who never programmed anything? So what is the compiler? Let's think about that. So what does the compiler do? Great. So what's your name? Helen. So Helen's saying that it changes whatever we have, whatever we write that's quasi-human readable. Some of you might debate that, but eventually it will be human readable, into binary, which we would never want to be programming at the level of individual bits. It actually, there's an intermediate step along there where it sort of compiles into what we'll later think about as ANT or assembly language, which is kind of, also more difficult to actually program in. It has to do with moving actual pieces of memory, things you might say, move this thing from piece of memory one to piece of memory two and back and forth, whatever. It's slightly in between what we have, this human readable thing, and then these bits. So that's the idea of a compiler. And what are some of the things a compiler does? What kind of compiler warnings can you get, or message errors can you get? Syntax error. Great. So it's kind of like a spell checker in a lot of ways. So not only does it do this conversion, in doing this conversion, it actually checks, are you doing anything that makes sense? And so you can have compiler errors, which are basically like, it'll catch things like a syntax error might be you spelled some variable name wrong, and so it can't find it. And it says that variable is undefined because you never declared it, and it doesn't know what you're talking about. Or you might do something that doesn't make sense, like you left off a semicolon, or you put a semicolon where it didn't belong, or you are missing some braces, or your braces don't line up, or your parentheses don't line up. So it'll catch all of that for you. It may not do it in the most readable way. It might say something very mysterious, but ultimately it's finding mistakes in. And if you think like the compiler, you can kind of figure out the warnings a little bit better, right? So the compiler is not like a human exactly. It can't just be like, oh, look at your sheet and see everything's right. It's going to read line by line by line, and as soon as you mess it up, it sort of tries to figure it out, but it might not realize what you did. It might not realize that you were just missing a brace sort of all the way at the end or somewhere in the middle or whatever exactly, because it takes it so long to figure out where they line up. So it might give you a very mysterious, like, expected bracket or expected semicolon before this or something, and you're like, what? I have a semicolon there. So when you can't figure out what the error is, try to look a little bit more broadly, like at the lines surrounding what line the error is on. Because that's another thing, actually. We're sort of digressing away from main for a second and talking about compilers, but that's okay. So one thing you'll get is when you actually compile. So what do we do? What do we write to compile our program? GCC. So what is GCC? GCC is the actual compiler, and a compiler is just a program that's running. So GCC is a program that's running. It compiles your code. So basically does this whole spell checking, conversion to binary thing. And then you write what? Sure. So you can write a dot out. So a dot out is going to be after you've actually done the compilation. That's going to be to run your program, or it's one of the ways of running your program. You could actually specify a different name than a dot out, but yeah. Sure, my program. That might be what you want to call the executable. And so later, instead of typing a dot out, you would actually type my program to run the program. But you need to tell it what to actually compile, right? So where does that go? So I heard different things. Where does it go? Okay, so you could put it here. I always have to double check where it goes, and then if it gives me an error and it says my program is not a file that you have, then it just means you need to switch the order because it's trying to think of this as your actual code. So this might be like hello.c or something, or myprogram.c would probably make more sense, but you can compile anything to have any name, yeah. So you'd actually want to have so when you open up your file to start making a file, I usually open it up with a name and then always save to that name. To compile, you have to save. So it's actually not going to compile something that's unsaved. So if you type in stuff after you've saved last, that will not be compiled. So yeah, so you would have saved something called hello.c or whatever else. Huh? Oh, what does this do? So it's actually dash, but this you don't actually have to put. So if you don't put this, then what you end up with is an executable. So what's happening when you compile, right? You're going from a .c file to an executable file, or what they call a binary file, which makes sense, right? Because we said it converts it all into binary. And so that's a program that you can actually run. And so that has a specific name. Here it has the name a.out. That's like the generic default name if you don't specify a name you want. But you're given the option to specify a name that you want because a.out gets a little bit old after a while and it's not that descriptive. So you might specify my program or hello or leap or BMI or anything instead of my program there. And the dash O flag just tells it you're specifying a name. But those are the basics. Okay, yeah.
So my program portion is the name of the executable file.
Yeah.
And hello.c is the name of the file that saves the code.
Yes. Awesome. So, huh? So what's going to happen is the compiler, GCC, will look at the code in here, and then it's going to save a new file. So it's not going to actually touch this. It's just going to read it. It's going to save a new file called whatever you call it here, unless you don't give a name here, in which case it will save it as a.out. That's a file you can run, okay? So you can actually type a.out and press enter, and it will run just like your program, like that will be your program running there. So if you said, so if your program was Hello World, it would actually just print Hello World. Yeah, canonically. I mean, so hello.c is nothing special. It's like usually in every time you learn a new language, the first thing you learn is how to print to the screen Hello World. It's just a computer science like thing. I don't know. But it's nothing special. It's just one more program you can. No. I mean, like you'll probably have, so you'll have lots of different ones. You'll turn in leap.c, bmi.c, etc. And probably for your own convenience, you don't want to compile these all to have the name a.out, because each time you do that, it's going to write over whatever you had before, which isn't the end of the world, because you can recreate it by compiling again, but why not compile to a name that's more descriptive and that you can keep separate from each other? So you would compile this one to be leap. Notice that there's no .c, just leap. And then this wouldn't be BMI, whatever. BMI. Yep. Okay. So hopefully that clarifies some compiling stuff. So I forget how we even got on this exactly. In any case, we'll go back to main, and I'm sure I'll remember. But is that clear to people? Okay. So you compile, and it converts everything into binary, and you can actually run that thing. Now, if it encounters an error along the way, like you typed an error into your program, not a logical error so much as a syntax error, then it will catch that and tell you about it and won't let you compile into be a new executable file. But you can still write plenty of bugs into your program that are just logical bugs. They're things, it's like writing an English essay. You can write plenty of essays that are spelled completely correctly and grammatically completely correct, but make absolutely no sense whatsoever logically. Or maybe just have small logical flaws in them. Similarly with programming, you can do the same thing. And those are actually usually a lot harder to deal with and find, but as long as you test your program, you'll find them and be able to think, what did I write that didn't make enough sense, and go back and fix it. Okay, so let's go back to talking about main. So main is a function, and that's where your program execution always starts. And it takes some parameters, which go in here, which some of you guys have mentioned. We'll get to those in a second. And it has some return type, which is usually int, not always, but usually int. Okay, so let's actually come back to main in a second, and let's actually talk about functions more generally, because I think they make more sense not talking about main, because main is sort of a special case of a function. And then we'll come back to talking about what's up with main. So, is it okay if I make this go away, this GCC thing? All right, so let's talk about functions. So he talked about this a little bit today, but what is a function in general? It's true in math. Maybe in math it's scary, though. CS is actually more fun to talk about functions. But right, so it's kind of like this black box, right? So you have this black box. This is sort of an abstraction or a higher level way of thinking about what a function is. So this is your function. Okay? And what's going to happen is you're going to put stuff in. Now, what stuff is this? This is the stuff the function actually needs to know about to work. You don't put stuff into every function. Sometimes you just say, function, go do work, and come back to me. And you don't actually need to know about anything specific from elsewhere in the program. But the general case is that you put stuff in, and then it spits stuff out, or rather, returns stuff to you. Okay, either of these steps can be taken out if you want. Like, you don't have to give the function stuff, and you don't have to get that stuff back from the function, but the general case is that both of these things happen. And what's happening in here? Well, there's a bunch of work being done. And when I say work happens, what do I mean? Well, what I mean is something's being executed. So the program is actually running that function and is executing stuff. So if we think about main, let's suppose for a second nothing comes into main. Okay? We actually, as we'll see, the way the stuff comes in is usually through whatever's in these brackets. And so there actually can be stuff coming into main, but let's not think about that for a second. What's the work that's done? Well, that's everything in your program, actually. It's all these lines of code, which might be as simple as print hello world, or they might be as complex as ask somebody for input, process that input, tell them if something is a leap year or not, whatever. All that work. Then you hit this final curly brace, and you're done. And as it turns out, main both takes stuff in and returns stuff, but for the general case of main, where you're actually not making use of those things, it actually can take in pretty much nothing and return back pretty much nothing. It's just going to do a bunch of work. Okay? What are some other functions that we've seen so far? Question. So void actually means that you're specifically not returning anything. But let's get back to the details of sort of return types and all that stuff in a second. Great, so printf. So let's talk about printf for a second. So printf is a function. What does printf take? What do you put into printf so it can do work? Huh? A string, fantastic. So whatever you want to say, like, hello. Right? And so the print function, wherever it's defined, actually knows that it's going to get a string in. And it's going to process that string and do what with it? Spit it out to the screen, right? So the interesting things with functions are functions can be used in one of two ways, or we talk about functions in two different places. One is we actually use a function. And the other is that we actually write a function or define a function. For the purposes of sort of thinking about class today, there's actually one other thing you can do, which is declare a function, but we won't go there right now. It's kind of like declaring a variable. You're just telling the compiler it's coming later. So when I say use a function versus write or define a function, what am I talking about? When we say printf hello, what are we doing? Using or writing a function? Using a function. You're actually saying, and using a function is actually called calling a function. So if I say I'm going to call printf, that means I'm going to go, and what's actually happening on the inside of the computer? Well, what's happening is that you saw the stack frame briefly in class today, is that on the stack, which we won't get into too much right now, but basically inside the machine is putting aside what you might consider a scratch pad or some temporary space. So it's actually called a stack frame. But might as well just be a scratch piece of paper. And it's going to do some spare work here, right? For instance, if we look at a different case of printf, we can actually give it more than just a string. What else can we give printf? So like, what if I want to say printf, and at this point in my program, I have this variable name, and somebody inputted their name into this variable, and I want to print out hello, comma, their name. So I want to print hello. Actually, sorry. Comma, and whatever their name is. Can you guys see this? I can raise it if you want. Oops, wrong. Hello, and then their name. How do I do that? How do I print out that variable? Sure, so suppose we have the variable at like above here, just hypothetically. I'm out of space, so I'm not going to write it. Okay, %s, why did you pick %s? Great, because it's a string. Or rather, s is going to take the place of a string. Great, so s takes the place of a string. And then what do we have to do? Suppose the variable is called name. Great, comma, name. So most of you guys probably realize already that this is going to take name, put it in there, and so you're going to get hello, and then whatever, comma, whatever their name is. Questions on that? specific thing. Yeah. So that would be like up here in the program somewhere, you would ask them for their name. Yeah, scanf would probably be a good way of doing it. There are different ways. Reading in strings is actually a little bit tricky just because they can enter a string that's too long, and if you don't allocate enough space to store that string in initially, you get some of these buffer overflows that we talked about in class briefly or mentioned briefly. That breaks your program. So we haven't been having you read in a lot of strings. I think there might be a function in Roberts or whatever, CS50, that actually gets a string and takes care of that for you. It allocates more space if necessary, yeah. If you want to use scanf, you can. What program are you thinking of? Okay, to get an integer, there's actually a function called getInt, and we'll do an example of getInt later. But that would be a much better option than scanf for now. Scanf scans for input very generally. I would avoid using it if you can avoid it for like this week. And then later, when you can think more about what it's actually doing, then you can use it in a more safe way. But that will get you some writing some insecure code if you're using scanf to start out. Okay. So how do we get to this? So what I said was basically, so printf can actually take a variable number of arguments. Printf was defined so that it could take this and then as many of these variables as the user wants, as the code writer wants. Okay. So what happens when you actually use this function like we see here? So we're actually using it. We're calling printf. So we're in our function. Let's say we have main, and then we have this print statement like you saw over there, and I won't bother rewriting it. Okay. Well, what's actually going to happen? What's going to happen is that when we first opened up main, we got ourselves some main scratchpad. Okay, and it's not imperative that you understand all of this right now, but it's a good introduction to sort of a way of thinking about all this. So we get some main scratch pad. This is in the computer. This is what's happening, or it's kind of like the way we think about what's happening in the computer. It sets aside some temporary space, and that temporary space is going to stick around for it to do scratch work on, and basically its calculations and stuff, as long as the main function is being executed, right? Which happens to be for the whole time you're running your program because it's main, but that's not true of every function. And so it'll end as soon as you get to this curly brace. So we open up that scratch pad. Then we get to this printf statement. What happens? We get a new scratch pad that's for printf. So we'll put that over here. Huh? So you're actually calling another function, so we can think of it having its own scratch pad. Which is actually really important for issues of scoping, like we talked about with the swap function today. Because if you pass something into printf, then you, like if you modify that thing, and printf is not the best example because it's not actually going to modify anything for you. But we'll go over like swap or a similar example in a little bit, or sum or something like that. If you modify something over here, okay, like say you have a chunk of memory over here, which is some integer, and you actually update the value of that integer here, you add 1 to it, like say it's 5, and then you change it and write 6, that does nothing for anything over here, okay? So unless you actually return that value back, main will never know about it. Okay, let me go back to the printf example for a second, and then let me come back to this, and we'll talk about this more. All right, so all I was saying here was that printf gets its own scratch pad, and all these arguments, or it'll know about all these arguments. So it'll know about the hello argument, and it'll know about the name argument. Those are things that we're telling the function about, okay? And then what would you expect the print function to need to return to us, the people using print? Anything or nothing or what? So returning is just going to tell whoever called printf. And by when I say whomever, we sort of talk about these things in like human-like terms. That we don't actually mean a person. What we mean is the main function called printf. We could have called printf from some other function too, but suppose we call it from the main function. So you kind of think that it doesn't, that it could return. So why do you say zero? Do you mean zero or nothing? Okay, so this is actually a great point. So true is usually non-zero, and false is usually zero. But you're getting at a good idea. You're actually getting at a very good idea. Now, the answer I would expect from you guys generally is that you'd be like, oh, it doesn't need to return anything. And that is sort of how you should think about it. Printf, it's done its work, and you don't really need to know about anything. Now, for programming's sake, the way printf is written is actually does return something, and that tells you something about how it actually printed, like if it was successful or not. Yeah. Right, so it actually does return an error code back. You don't really need to think about that because you're never going to use it, because you're probably never going to be in a case where it actually is not printing. But there might be some more advanced program you're writing where you actually really care to make sure that that print was successful. Yeah. Yeah. Right, so now let's talk about defining functions versus using functions, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, and void is just one type that you may or may not use. Okay, so let's take another example. Let's take the example of writing, and I know we did this one last time, but I think it's going to bring up some good issues again. Oops. So let's think about in your main program, so remember we're distinguishing between using a function and actually writing that function, defining that function that will be used. So, and actually, do you guys get that difference at all? Like, to what extent do you guys understand that difference is my question. It's okay if you don't fully understand that difference, but what I'd like to point out is that why might we write a function? Maybe that's a good way of talking about it. Why would we write a function? Yeah. Great. So a library is a whole set of functions, right? And that you can use those. Why did somebody write those functions? Why did you include that library? Exactly. Pretty much everything comes down to making your life easier, making yourself more lazy, whatever else. You don't want to rewrite the printf function. You don't even know necessarily how you would do that. Somebody else figured it out, and you could probably figure it out at the end of this class, but you don't want to rewrite that. You just want to use it. Somebody else did it. You don't want to rewrite getInt. You don't want to, and let's say you write a function that you know you're going to use all the time, even if you're just going to use it multiple times in one program, you don't need to never copy-paste code. As soon as you go to copy-paste, stop. And turn it into a function. You never want to duplicate code. How do you turn it into a function? So that's exactly what we'll talk about. So let's think that here we're in main and we're writing some very basic math program. And one of the things that you actually need along the way is you need to often be figuring out what the sum of two numbers is. Now, this is basic enough that you probably wouldn't turn it into a function in reality. It's just one number plus another number. But for the purposes of this example, it's interesting. So let's say we want some function. We're going to use it. We're going to call it sum just because that makes sense. That's what it's going to do. So this is the function name. Then, remember, we're in main here. So this is where we're using, or rather calling, the function. Okay? Different from defining the function. So we're going to use it, and what are we going to do? Well, let's suppose we have two integers here, int x and int y. I'll just write them on one line for now because I'm out of space. And you can actually do this if you want, but this is just separated by a comma. If you don't have to, you can do them on separate lines. And let's say x equals 5 and y equals 6 for now. This is obviously a silly example because why would you actually do this? You would just write 5 plus 6. But you can generalize this example afterwards, and we can talk about how you would do that. But let's say we want to sum x and y. And we want to remember the answer here, so we'll shove that in z. And let's just, I'm out of space, but let's just declare z. So we'll just say int z. Questions so far? Here, why don't I rewrite this to be more readable? So we have ints x, y, and z, and we'll have x equals 5, y equals 6, and we actually want to store the sum in z. Okay. So our program right now has no idea what the sum function is. We're going to actually have to define that function. But let's just think about using this function. Do you see how this is similar to how you've used get in and printf? You're calling the function by writing its name, then you're writing parentheses, and then you have the option of putting stuff in those parentheses if this function needs to know about anything. You're going to do that. Okay? Since we're defining the function, we can decide what it gets to know about. But if somebody else has defined it, you better play by their rules. So get in takes how many things in the parentheses? So printf takes percent %d, comma the variable, right? So that can take, well, it takes the string and then however many variables. How about get in? How many things does that take? Right, it doesn't have anything in the parentheses. Get in doesn't actually have to know about anything from wherever it's being called, right? So we want to be thinking about space and who knows about what and what functions know about what. So the main function, when you use getInt in main, or coincidentally when you use it in any other function, you can use any function sort of within any other function. When you call getInt, main has nothing valuable to tell getInt. Nothing that getInt really inherently needs to know from main, or rather memory, or like, because what happens when you actually, I can't even walk. So this is a good thing to know about, is what happens when you're actually telling or passing in arguments, telling that function about arguments. What happens here is you're actually, so when you call sum, so we've got our main scratch pad here, and it's got space on the scratch pad for three variables, right? X, Y, and Z. So we've got X, we just draw them as boxes, whatever, and Z, okay? And X, we stored 5 in X, and we stored 6 in Y, right? And we haven't put anything in Z. Although, if we were to print Z, what would print? If we printed Z at this stage. Huh? If we print what's actually in this box. So if you print the variable Z, not the letter Z, but the variable Z, it'll actually print whatever's in this box, which is real memory in the computer. So it probably just has some junk value, some weird value. We saw that a bit in class today. It was printing out random numbers, or seemingly random numbers. This is just junk in the machine. Okay? So you need to make sure you always initialize your variables before you do anything with them, like printing them, because you'll break your program. But that's a side note. So what happens when we actually get to sum? Well, we get a new scratch pad. We'll call it sum. Okay? And what happens here? So we passed in X and Y, okay? What happens then is that this value X is copied over into sum, 5, and it doesn't have a name yet. We'll get to naming it in a second. And the Y is copied over, 6. And this right here, if there's one thing you take away from this, is actually probably the most important thing, is that these values are actually copied when you pass them into a function. And you'll see this again lots of times in sections, so whatever, if you don't learn now, it's okay. If I actually were to do something in sum, like let's say I wanted to add 1 to this, and I made this 6, this is what I was saying before, you actually have done nothing to the memory over here in main. And this is what's called scoping. This is in a different scope, okay? Sort of in a different territory, a different place in the world. And so main, unless you go tell it about anything you've done over here, main has no idea that you've changed anything. And when you get back to main, rather when sum finishes, if you don't return anything from sum, this thing goes away, and main is as happy as ever. It's exactly the same. Yeah. Right, so we saw with printf, it is possible with some more advanced programming to do something with a variable amount of input, but you're not actually ever going to be doing that. So what you're going to do is you're going to decide sum takes 2 things and 2 things only. Sum is, I guess, not the most realistic example. It's not even a very useful function. It can just sum 2 numbers. Well, whatever, so can the plus sign. But, no, you can only, if you decide that sum takes 2 numbers, and by say you, I mean when you go define the function, which we'll go do in a second, then you better only give it 2 numbers, okay? And so what do we want this function to do in terms of what's happening in memory or in terms of us just thinking? So what do you want to tell? So we're going to copy over 5 and copy over 6. And what do we want this guy, this sum scratch pad, to do? Add them and actually return the addition, right? Because we want the addition to end up being stuck in Z, right? And so we said Z equals sum over here, right? So whatever is actually returned, this whole thing will actually, when that's evaluated or executed, what happens is it ends up becoming just whatever's returned. So say we return 11 from adding them, then 11, or whatever is returned, is stuck into Z, okay? We'll see all this in code in a second, and then 11 would be written here. But that's only if you return, or rather spit some stuff back when you are done with sum. Questions at this point? So, great segue. We'll get to that in a second. Any other questions on this? Okay, so when do you put int? So, let me move this up. Oops. We'll do it over here. Okay, you guys can see this spot right here? Okay, so I'll try not to write in the shade. So, when do you put int? So what were we doing here? We were using the function, right? And so what else did we say that we have to do? To be able to use a function, somebody, either in a library, which you include, or somewhere else in your program, you need to define that function, right? You need to define the sum function and what work it does. Is essentially you're saying what work the sum function will do when called, okay? So you would say something like, okay, I know my function name is going to be sum, right? So what are the parts of a function? The parts of a function are the name. I feel like I was already writing this at one point, but... Oh, over there, whatever. So the function name. And then the parameters. And what else? The other thing is the return type. Okay. So the return type. So let's actually fill in the return type last. Or actually, we can talk about it now. What type of thing, by type, I mean, I guess, kind of thing in terms of piece of memory. So, like, is it a float? Is it a character? Is it a string? Is it what? What type of thing do we want to be returning for this function? Int. Fantastic. And we can go verify that we're actually doing stuff that makes sense by saying, is this thing that we're actually returning and storing into, is that of the same type? It better be, because if we're returning a character here and storing it in, or a string or something, or some other type and storing it in an integer, that doesn't make much sense, okay? And sometimes that won't compile, and sometimes you'll get a warning depending on what the two types are, but we know that we want to return an integer, like 11, for instance, was the example that we returned, and we're going to store it in something that was declared as an integer. So far we're making sense. So this is the return type right here. Now, there are functions that you don't need to return anything. What's an example function where you don't really need to return anything? What kinds of operations would you be doing? Great, displaying a message. So let's say you're writing a game, and you're going to write a function to print the instructions, okay? Because you don't want that sitting in the middle of main. You just want to call print instructions. And then that goes off and does some, basically, what you can term side effect work. So void ends up being the return type there. So let's say we write print instructions. So this is the name of our function, right? Do we think it needs any parameters? This is up to you. We're imagining a hypothetical example where we're writing some game and it's just to print instructions. Probably not, right? You probably doesn't need to know about anything from main. It's just at a certain point in the program we want to print the instructions. So we're going to do that. And what do we need to return? Well, we heard that we don't really need to return anything. It just needs to go do some work. So in our drawing up here, it's one of these functions that just, we need to make sure that work happens, but we don't need to tell it about anything or get anything back. So the return type here is void, which basically tells your compiler, I'm not actually returning anything. It's just another type or thing or whatever. Actually, is I'm going to return nothing. Okay?
Well, what's the view?
what's the use? Like, what's the point of void? It's really there for the sake of the compiler to, so that the compiler understands and so that you're writing code that makes sense. So, like, if you were to not write anything there, I actually forget if it defaults to in or void. You could try it and see what it defaults to. But basically, void is there for the clarification of the compiler, so the compiler knows this is a function you've written that you actually don't want anything returned from. That may still be confusing, though, if you don't really understand what it is to return something. So I'm happy to clarify that. And we'll, let's keep talking about it. Let's finish the sum example. And we'll do another example to see if you guys actually understand it, and you guys can do it on your own. So let's say sum of, and we know that we wanted to take two things into this function, right? So when you're declaring or defining a function, you actually have to tell the compiler what type of things you're expecting. So what type are we expecting for the first parameter? Int. Exactly, int. Now what do we want to call this? Well, we need to give it some variable name so that in here, in our function, we can actually use it. So for the purposes of demonstration, I'll call it A, and we'll get back to talking about whether or not it matters what you name this. And then we need another int, right? Int B. Right? So remember on the scratch pad, I said that these things weren't actually named yet? Well, that's because they actually get whatever names you give them here. Okay? So this thing would actually be named A, and this thing would actually be named B, and X, since we passed in X here, and we could equivalently have just passed in the numbers 5 and 6, right? You can use your function however you want as long as you make sure you're matching the type. 5 is an integer, so it's a perfectly reasonable thing to be passing in, right? You could also pass in 5 and Y or something like that, whatever you want. Let's go back to the X and Y example, though. If this is all sort of flying by you a little too quickly, it's okay. We'll keep talking about it. So remember, if we're thinking about memory, this gets copied over into there. There's a new copy of 5 here, and there's a new copy of 6 here. Okay? So what do we want to do over here? Well, we want to actually do the work of summing, so what do we actually write here? I'll pose the question, do we write X plus Y, or do we write A plus B? Since I figure you're going to put the plus sign in regardless. A plus B, fantastic. Can you tell me why? Great, so in the scope, so while we're executing the sum function, which we're right now defining, while we're in this scope, we're only going to know about this part of the world. We can't see over here, we're just going to know about this. And all we know about are the variables A and B, right? That's what we called them. That's what we called those chunks of memory. And they got some values copied into them. Clear so far? So we're going to add A and B. And what do we want to do with this? Return it, fantastic. So this is an almost trivially simple function, where it's just one line. How else could we have done this if we didn't want to put this all in one line? What could we have done? Great, so we could have declared another variable. So I won't erase this, but suppose I was actually writing the exact same function. We could have just said first, int c, right? I just want another integer. What does that do on my scratch pad? Great, so it actually, we've got another chunk of memory, okay? And this is great because we can write to any memory we specifically ask for. We cannot write to memory that we don't ask for. And that gets, when we get later to arrays and stuff like that, we'll ask for a specific chunk of memory, like this big. If you try to write to memory over here or over here, you've got a huge problem and you're going to cause seg faults or broken programs or whatever else. Okay, but anyway, so we've got three pieces of memory there. And what are we going to do? We said C equals A plus B. So the computer's going to do this calculation. This evaluates to what? If suppose we passed in 5 and 6. 11, thank you. That gets stored in there. So 11 is now stored in here. And what do we want to do with C now? Return C. And so that means C, so that means what happens is Some, actually, this scratch pad, as soon as you return, if you write any code underneath the return, it will never be executed because return means you're done, you're out of there. And so this actually gets erased. The scratch pad is gone, but 11 ends up right here where you called the function and gets shoved into Z. Okay, yes. Yeah. Those are two separate things. I was just doing two different examples of the same function. Now, what I said actually should be qualified. You can have code that comes after the return, but it's sort of in. Once you actually execute the return line, you're not going to execute any further code. So, the example I would show you would be if you say something like if x equal 5, return. I don't know what, something, some value. Else, return some other value. So here we literally have code coming after the first return, but once you hit this return, you're not going to be executing any more code, which actually makes sense, right? You're going to do either this or this. So it's fine to be returning, like maybe here we return 6 and here we return negative 5 or something. This example doesn't make a lot of sense, but yeah. Return means stop executing this function. It means you're done. It means this stack frame that I have goes away, and whatever value I returned, which in the case of a void return is actually nothing. So in the void case is actually the most simple case. The void case just means get rid of my stack frame because my function is done working and go back to wherever I was called and give them back nothing. Just come back, meaning program execution returns to here and you keep executing lines of code after that. That's all it means. But you have the option of while you're actually getting back to where you started executing, where you got called from, you being the function in this case, there's the option of actually throwing some value back there at the same time. Okay? And so when you throw that value back, now, an interesting case would be this. If you were to just call the sum function, sum of 5 and 6. Now, suppose you return 11, right? But you don't actually store it anywhere. What happens with that 11? Where does it go? It goes away. It's gone. It's no longer yours. You have no idea about it. The computer has lost it. And so that 11 got returned to here, but it never got stored in anything. And so, on this scratch pad, you never wrote down 11. It's like if I were dictating to you. If you didn't write it down, shortly you'd forget, right? Make sense? Okay. All right, more questions. This is like all of programming in a nutshell, so, I mean, kind of, not exactly, but it's all the basics, so it's really good to dwell on this for a long period of time. Yes. Okay, so I'm not sure exactly what part of lecture you're referring to. One thing I can think about is, suppose you're not doing something where you like really want the value back, like sum, but you're doing something like printf. Printf, you don't really need it to return anything, right? Because it's just going to go do some work, it's going to print out to the screen, that's it. Printing to the screen is very different from returning. That's often a point of confusion. They're different. So printing to the screen is actually just writing output to something called standard output. And you don't really need anything back. For instance, print instructions, you just assume that it went and executed. When you'd have to use it, you'd have to write it somewhere that you actually wanted to call print instructions. So that's how you would do it. You'd actually write the name, these parentheses, and the semicolon. Okay? This is a good point. This is getting back to Victor, to your question, which is, where do I write this return type? Well, note that when you use it, you do not write the return type. Okay? It's because you define it elsewhere, but also just because it wouldn't make much sense to write int here. You have the option of storing it into something that is an int, but it's just not, you're not defining the function there, so you just don't need it. So to answer your question, so for one of these print functions, you might coincidentally realize that computers are not perfect, and they're going to do everything they can, but they can run into issues, like they can be out of memory, or they try to write to standard output, and something goes wrong, like standard output won't accept it or something. I don't know. These are rarer cases, okay? But they do happen. And so people that are really aggressively programming to be as secure as possible, like you're working at Microsoft, millions of people are going to use your code, and some of them are going to try to break it intentionally, and some are going to break it unintentionally. How do you avoid that? Well, you might do that with what's called an error check. So one way of doing some error checking is saying, okay, did my function actually execute properly how I wanted it to? So you might turn that void function into returning either a Boolean, which is true or false, or more simply returning an integer, and you might only return ever 0 or 1, which is effectively the same thing as just returning a Boolean, right? And you might use that return. So you might have written, it would have to be that when you defined print instructions, so here we were defining it, right? So how would you define it? Well, you'd say like printf, whatever, a bunch of instructions. Okay, that's the bulk of the program. And then you might have something like if, and actually the way you'd have to do it is printf returns something, right? You'd actually have to store that something in some variable. We'll just call it var for now. And we'll say int var. Okay? And then you might check that variable. Okay? So if this variable is 0, that means there were 0 errors, right? That's just how printf was defined. So if var is 0, then what do you want to return? You want to return success, essentially, right? And you might actually write that. You might actually, and this is a great thing to bring back to lecture, you might say return success. Success, you see I wrote it in all caps. That's because I would have pound defined it in my program. So do you see the pound define in class today? He wrote up at the very top of his program, right after the includes, he wrote pound define. And then he wrote quizzes, but I'll write success, all caps. And then you can pound define, basically meaning you can say that anytime you see success in the program, it's going to be some number. So what number should that be? Well, it really doesn't matter what number you make it, because you're always going to use success. You're never going to check for the number. You're always going to check for success. But let's just say it's 1 or something. So return success. And then wherever you called print instructions, maybe you called it over here, right? You would say that some int, let's just say, say you had the int a here. You'd say a equals print instructions, right? And you could check here if it was success or not. Now I want to go back and make actually a very, very important style comment. So let's talk about conditions for a second. So if I say something like this, my TF is going to cry a little bit inside. Why? Well, let's take a more general case. Let's not worry about this success error checking business. I need another board. Let me use this one. So if we talk about conditions for a second, so when you say if, and then something in here, what happens with that something when the program is executing? The program looks at it and decides what? If it's true or false, right? And everything, absolutely everything, is true or it's false, okay? Not just Booleans. So what is false defined to be in numbers? 0. False is 0. 0, okay? True is commonly 1, but not necessarily. It's actually anything non-zero. This is a very important distinction. So if you were to actually write 5 in here, this would not be a normal thing to write, but if you were to test it out, 5 is what, 0 or non-zero? Non-zero. So what would happen? This would evaluate to be true, right? And you would actually do whatever was in the if chunk here. Okay. Now you can take huge advantage of this. This is probably like the number one thing that we write on people's papers, is that they write something like this. They write something like some variable, if x equal true. And we want to cry a little bit. Why? Okay, great. So what if we just try if x? What would that do? X would be evaluated. The computer would decide, and by that I mean the computer would just decide, is x true or is it false? If x is 0, it would decide it was false, in which case, what would happen in the if statement? You would not do whatever's in here. You would go around it, right? You would actually jump to this line to start executing, which could be an else or it could be anything. Now, if x was anything that was not 0, coincidentally, if x was true, for instance, or if x was 5 or 10 or anything else, but most likely x would actually be true, especially if x is a Boolean, right? It's going to be true or false, necessarily. If it's true, then what will happen? You'll actually execute whatever's in here. You see that? Take a break, think, and realize you don't need to write that. Now, let me give you a harder example to see if you can think through it for a second. What if I actually wanted to say, not if something is true, but I actually wanted to write if x equal false. And I buy my TF's argument that the true thing works out, it evaluates, and if it's true, it does it. But I wanted to do it if it's false, not if it's true. And I know that this is going to work, right? What do I do? So that would be the same thing. So you could similarly write this, if x equals 0. But I would argue that that's actually no better. In fact, that's actually slightly worse, probably. But So let's say I write if 0. What does that mean? What will happen when I execute that? It'll never go into the if statement, right? And it's never going to even think about x. Do we understand that? Okay. But these are all good thoughts. I like the way you guys are thinking. Do you guys see the fundamental problem, though? The fundamental problem is that if I were just, in this example, if I were to just write if x, I would sort of be getting closer, but I would actually have broken it. I would be doing whatever's in the if statement when x was true, but I actually want to do whatever's in the if statement when x is false. It's the opposite. Fantastic. Not. If not x. What does this not operator do? This not operator reverses whatever, like, so this whole thing gets evaluated. So if x evaluates to true, or sorry, let's think if x evaluates to false. So here we care about if x is false. We want to catch that case and go into the if statement. So let's suppose x is false. What's the not of false? It's essentially asking, what's the opposite of false? Well, that's true, so this whole thing is going to evaluate to true. Fantastic. That means we'll do whatever's in the if statement, because that if thing evaluated to true, that condition evaluated to true. Questions there? I promise at least 4 or 5 of you will still write this thing that I detest, which is equal true. I did it for like all of 50 and then in part of 51, and then they're really like, really, if you want to get your life together, get rid of this silliness. But it's okay, you're learning about it in like week 2 or 3. Anyways, you can ignore me and think this is all very silly, but I think it's clever. So hopefully you guys will buy into this eventually and see how it's a little bit nicer. Yes. 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 Let me just see, are there more questions here, and then we'll do that. Questions on any of this stuff? My writing is rather unclear. When I look back at the board, I'm always amazed that anybody ever understands a thing. So please ask me for clarification. So this one is saying if x is not 0, And then this one is saying if x is 0, essentially. Okay? Cool. You guys can think more about this later on. This is kind of one of those things that if you can't get your program to work by doing one of these nicer things, then just go back to whatever you know works, like x equal true, and then talk to TF about how to make this stylistically better. Okay? But this should work. It's just if you get lost in translation somewhere, do whatever. Always in programming, write the smallest piece that you know will work and test it and then move on from there and always make it bigger. So like somebody in office hours last night was saying, okay, I don't know how to do this Mario program. And I'm like, okay, let's sit down and talk about it. And they're like, well, I do know how to do it, but I don't know how to handle the fact that it's not a perfect pyramid, right? That there are two X's at the top as opposed to a perfect pyramid. You guys know what I'm talking about? Yeah? So my response there is, okay, fine. Make it work as a perfect pyramid and then figure out how to special case that top thing, right? How to deal with that. If you're writing code and you don't know how to write the whole program, don't worry about it. Write whatever you know how to write and then build on that. Okay? It's like if you were actually to build a whole building, you don't have to know how to lift the whole building into place at once. You sort of start with all the building blocks and build it up. Okay? That's just a fundamental programming principle. But let's talk about argc and argv. So what do we know that, so we have what? Int argc, right? And we have what here? Char star, side note of mine. I know he said in class, why would you ever call this char? That makes no sense. I always call it char. So there are two camps in most of CS, and they don't always line up together, but there's the camp that uses Emacs and the camp that uses VI. Camp that calls it char, the camp that calls it char, etc. Now, I would just like to make one point for the camp that calls it char, which is char is short for character, yes? Which makes sense to me. Character, not character. Anyways, you guys can make your own decisions. So char star argv. Okay. And then bracket. There are also two camps on bracket placement. Some people always put them on the same line. Some people always put them on the other line. I always put it on the same line. He always puts it on the other line. Again, your own choice, whatever. But be consistent. Don't sometimes put it on the same line, sometimes put it on the other line. So what are these things? So generally speaking, what are these things in a function when you have some stuff there? What are those things called? Parameters. Wow, fantastic. Input. Input to the function. Now, I'll ask you guys a question. What would main need to know about? Main is the beginning of our program. How could it need to know about anything outside of main? What would that even be? That it was called, so it's sort of called, it's executing, it's on its way. This is a hard thing to think about if somebody hasn't told you the answer already. So not from the library. So the libraries are just a bunch of other functions. And actually what happens when you compile with a library, I think this is some tangent that I forgot to talk about earlier, is that code actually gets copied directly from the library into your program when it's compiled. That's why you have to write the dash ls cs50 so that it actually knows where to go find that library and copy the code in. And then it executes like from just within your file, but your file now has a bunch more stuff.
Wait, are libraries where it's compiled?
Uh-huh, yeah.
So
where could I find the cs50.h? I have to check if he's made it available, but he plans to, so it should be available. Yeah, it's there? It's in one of those cs50 folders. Standard.io, I think the easiest way to find that is to Google, frankly, and find the part that you want, but you can open that up too. That's just a regular file. So what were we talking about? Oh yeah, what might main need to know about? So the only thing it could really be knowing about is something sort of from the outside world, something that was around before we even called the program, because main is where the program starts, right? So what might that be? And I'll just tell you, because otherwise we'll be here all day. So I'm always running out of board space. Let me move this up. So, what would that be? There's like so much shade. Anyways, well, what kind of programs have you guys been running recently? There's a program for you to even start writing programs. What's that program? Nano. Or if you're slightly ahead of the curve, it will end up being Emacs. I highly recommend you guys look into Emacs, and we'll hopefully have resources up on the website soon to step you through sort of getting accustomed to Emacs. Why do I say this? Emacs is just like Nano, only it's a little bit fancier, and that's why we didn't have you start with it, because it's fancy enough that there are lots of key sequences to remember, and it's hard. We don't want you to like ramp up on that at the same time as you're learning how to program, but makes your life way easier in that you can use Emacs and it will indent everything for you, so you don't have to worry about like pressing space a bunch of times or tab a bunch of times. Just tab on any line and it always lines stuff up, and that's great because it will know, like you'll see if you've made a mistake because it won't tab correctly. Like if you're missing a brace or something, it like won't line up. So whatever. Emacs is great. Look into it or talk to me after this or whenever else, and I'll get you going on that. But you've used Nano. And what do you usually write after Nano? Sure. So like maybe questions. .txt. I mean, this could be a bunch of different things, whatever your file name is. Now, let's suppose you're the programmer writing the program Nano, okay? Obviously in some other text editor, because you're inventing this text editor. But you're writing Nano, okay? You're gonna want Nano when somebody uses it or runs that program, because that's all you're doing is running a program. You're going to want it to ask them if they want to save to questions.txt, right? But you don't know up front when you're writing the program Nano that they're going to call their thing questions.txt, so you can't hard code that in, right? You're going to have to know that, and that's going to change every single time they run this program, right? So you're going to have to have some way of getting that questions.txt into your program, right? So the way you do that is through argc and argv. So argc and argv are basically the way of, like, those are parameters passed into main. Those are what are called command line arguments. Which is actually a name that makes sense if you think about it. Why does it make sense? Well, this is the command line that you're running your program from, right? And these are the arguments, and you can have more of them, not necessarily for Nano, but for other programs. Like, what's another program? SSH. Then you write, like, your username at nice, blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to write it all. Then you write dash X, right? The order of those two things can vary. Well, this is multiple command line arguments. You're giving it this command line, what you want to securely log into, and you're giving it this argument, which is some flag, which tells it to behave in a specific way, right? And this program needs to know about these things that you're telling it sort of from the outside environment. Again, it gets those because those, this is based on the definite, how C is defined. C is defined such that these things will be passed into main. Now the question is, how are they passed in? Well, they're passed in as two different parameters. Why two different parameters? Well, we wouldn't want to always have to give a variable number of parameters, and depending on the program, you might have different numbers of arguments, right? So we just want two things. So what are the two sort of pieces of information that we need? Well, one of them turns out to be the number of command line arguments. So argc is just the number of command line arguments. So in this case, it would be how many? It would be two. Because there are two arguments after the name of the program. Here it would just be one. Okay? And then arg charstar argv, bracket, bracket. You don't need to know what all the charstar argv blah, 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 stuff is exactly, but let's just say it's actually a chunk of memory broken up to hold a bunch of different strings. The first string here for this one would actually just be questions.txt. Whatever, questions.txt would be in the first chunk of memory. And actually that would be it because there's just one argument. But in the next one, in the next example, it would actually be in the first chunk of memory, it would be like this username string, whatever, and then the other one would be dash X. Okay? Now this chunk of contiguous or memory chunks right after one another is called an array. And that was introduced in class today. We won't get into too much about arrays right now, but just know that it's a chunk of memory that you can put a bunch of similar things in. So in this case, it's a bunch of strings. Or actually what it is a bunch of pointers to characters, but that's like way beyond where we are right now. So just if you see charstar, that's just like seeing string pretty much. There are slight nuances, but it's generally like seeing string. So the type, so let's think about it. We know uh, we know that these are just the names of the arguments, right? Actually, not including these brackets. These are just the names of the arguments. Why? Well, it's the same as any other function. Remember, like, here with sum. Here with sum, we call this thing A and this thing B. That was the name inside of our function, right? With this thing, we call this thing argc and this thing argv, and those are going to be the names we can use. So we can actually say here, we could say printf percent %d argc, right? Because argc is an integer, right? And so we could say that and actually print out whatever that integer is, and you can test it. Test it with different programs. Like, so write a program and give it a bunch of command line arguments when you run it, and when you print argc, that'll print out however many command line arguments you gave it. You can test it and see if I'm lying to you or not. Make sense? Okay. And then argv is just what those actual arguments are. And that's a little bit harder to print out, so we won't get to it right now, but eventually it'll be easy for you to print out too. Okay, questions on anything here? Now I'll leave it up to you. We're at the end, sort of. Do you guys want to see a little bit about loops, or do you guys want to head out? It's up to you. Good for now. All right, I can talk about loops. I can talk about whatever if anybody wants to stay for it. But if you guys all want to go, that's totally fine too. I'm happy to talk all day, frankly. But all right. Here, I'll ask a challenge question, then whoever wants to think about it can think about it. You're asking, so you're writing a program where you need input from a user, and you want to keep prompting them for input as long as that input doesn't make sense. So let's suppose you want to keep prompting them for input as long as that input is negative. Not inherently the most challenging thing to write, but think about writing it. First of all, write it two different ways, and second of all, see if you can write it either in one line or either with a do while. So if you can write it in one line, I'll be impressed. Well, actually, so one line plus you have to write the print. You have to write the variable declaration is a line and the print statement is a line. But can you get everything else in one line? That is the question. Let's think about what do we have to do to get input from the user. So what do we do to get input from the user? What's the function we're going to call? Get in, okay. So we're going to get in. We probably want to store that somewhere, right? Because get in will return an integer, but if we don't store it in anywhere, then we're going to lose it. So let's say int age. So this is a nice point. So I've always been naming things x, y, whatever. Those are terrible variable names. I just do it because I'm not creative in front of the board. If you're just going to do a counter or something like that, you can use I and J and whatever, because those are pretty standard. But other than that, you should generally be using something that makes sense, like to somebody reading your code. So here we're going to be getting somebody's age and checking their age, for instance, or whatever the problem is. And so age is a good variable name because when you look at it, it makes sense, right? As opposed to X is a lot less descriptive. Try not to use really long variable names either. You can use multi-word variable names, in which case you could do something like my underbar age is one style, or you could choose to always write my where you do lowercase first word and then every other word starts with a capital. This is called camel case. So these are, again, two different camps. I usually write code like this. Some people write code like this. Either one is fine as long as you're consistent throughout your whole program. Okay? So we have age. So we've gotten their age. Now what do we want to do? Test their age, so check it. So how can I do the check? Huh? Sure, so with an if statement. So let's say if what? Age is less than 0. Or whatever. Sorry, what were you going to say? Okay, yeah, sure. If age is less than or equal to 0, whatever. Sure. Then what? So we don't actually want to be returning anything right now, right? Because we're not actually so returning would be telling some function that called this chunk of code about what we got as an answer. But we don't actually want to do that. What we actually want to do is not return, but rather ask the user for input again, right? So how do we ask them for input again? Yeah. Age equals get int. Yeah, sure. So maybe up here we'll actually say print, I don't know, whatever. Enter positive age, or yeah, right, or whatever fun thing. This would be ended by a semicolon. Okay? So this is going to go call this function again. Remember, getting scratch space for get int. It goes and asks the user for an integer, and then it returns that integer to here, and we store an age. And now we can look at it in age, right? So this function was called again, different from this time. Okay? Does that make sense? So this is great. Now what's the issue? What's the only issue with this program? It only checks one time, right? So we get their age first, and then we check it, and then we get their age again, but we don't ever check it again, and we don't ever do anything with it. So ideally, this program should repeatedly ask until it gets an acceptable answer. A while loop. So a while loop would be great. So maybe instead of this if statement, we can change it to while, right? Or for. Let's go with while. I think while is a little bit more natural here. So let's say while. For is great for when you know how many times you want to iterate sort of up front. This, you sort of want to iterate until some condition changes. So it makes a little bit more sense in a while. So let's say while age is less than 0, we're going to print yeah, right, and ask them for a new age. Great. So we're done, basically. Now my challenge to you is, can you write this slightly more nicely? Can you write this? Because why do I say slightly more nicely? I say that because we're repeating the same thing, right? Really, we want to do this once. Now, why can't I just get rid of this line and just do this part? I mean, I'm repeatedly asking for age, right? Until it's not less than 0. What's wrong, though? What's my compiler going to tell me? Exactly. So the first time, we have the error the first time through, right? So we get age, and then we say, well, age less than 0, but we didn't ever say what age was that first time. After that, we're fine, because we keep getting new ages. But we're going to run into a problem there, right? So how can we get around this? Well, what's a great loop for something that you want to do once, for sure, and then do a variable number of times based on the condition? So this is what's called a do while, which I think a lot of people didn't quite go over in section. I didn't quite get to it in mine, but sort of something that was in the section notes. So how does the do while look? So we say do whatever's in these braces while, and then some condition. So this is great. So what are we going to say? So this is all going to be done once no matter what. Then we're going to check the condition. If the condition is true, we'll go up and do it again. Check the condition. If it's true, we'll go up and do it again. Right? But we'll only do this once. If the condition is false, then we'll only do this once, and then we'll keep going. Okay, so what do we want to put in the do? Yeah, so age equals get int. While what? Yeah. Great. And you could write a print statement in there somewhere. Now, one more challenge, and then you can go. One more challenge is, instead of using the do while is actually probably the nicest way of going about this right here. But instead of using the do while, could we get this all into the while loop in one line? The thing to think about is that, how does this work? Well, this whole thing is evaluated, right? Whatever is in the while loop is evaluated. So let's try, if we do this here. Can you guys still see that, or is it behind the screen? Is it okay? Can you see this? It's fine? Okay. right, so I'm going to erase this. So let's. So what we had said was, originally we'd said int age, right? And then we'd said while age is less than 0, right? And then we'd said print something and get their age again. Oh, sorry. We need to get their age first. Hold on. So assume age has been declared. What we have to say is what? Age equals get int. And here we're going to say age equals get int again. Right? And we don't like this redundancy, right? What we really want to be saying is continuously get age, and while it's less than 0, keep asking, right? So, what if I showed you this? And you said you wanted to get age, so how are we going to get the age? Ask them, right, for get with get int. It seems weird, but just play along for a second. Age equals get int, right? And what is this chunk going to evaluate to? So this is going to go get called. We'll get some scratchpad, do some work, come back, and it returns some value into here. And that is what this whole chunk evaluates to. So what if we said this whole chunk, which is really just the age, is what? While it is what? Well, while it is less than 0 is what we've been thinking about, right? So this thing, this whole thing is one chunk. While this is less than 0, and so this whole thing gets evaluated, is this chunk less than 0? If it is, then we'll keep looping. If it's not, then we'll go right around the while loop. We have the open brace, the close brace, and we might have said printf, try again, right? Right? Questions on this? It's kind of cool, huh? How you can shove it all in one thing there. Does it make sense how that works? So less lines of code is better up until the point where it becomes very confusing. So you might judge that this is more confusing than this do while, wherever we had the do while, right there. The do while seems to make more sense in terms of just reading it. So it's probably a better option than this. But this is a nicer option still than this repetition of the age equals get int. One more question. What if I had put age equals get int in here with this printf? What would happen? Yeah, like right next to the printf, yeah, inside the while. What'll happen is it'll get another integer, totally unnecessarily, because what'll happen is it'll get int here and store it in age, check the condition, and then it will get another one here, but when you go up to the while loop, it'll get another one here, so it'd be totally pointless. Do you see that? Okay. Final questions. I think somebody else is maybe using this room right now. Any more questions on any of this? You're good? Feel free to email me any questions, or as you're doing the problem set, go to office hours. I think office hours are probably the single most useful thing in this whole course. So I encourage you to go to as many of them as possible, not just for your own TF. Go to them. It's a fun environment in the terminal room, too. Cool. Thanks for coming, guys.